If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
This is a Sports Radio 740 podcast on SportsRadio740.com.
Big news, sports fans!
Yeah, here we go!
1, 2, 3, 4!
Sports Radio 740 brings you ESPN college football analyst Tom Luganville. Brought to you exclusively by Riverbank and Trust. Their service runs deep at Riverbank and Trust, with convenient locations in Montgomery, Prattville, Wetumpka, Millbrook, Gadsden, Auburn, and Opelika. Now, here's ESPN's Tom Luganville on Sports Radio 740.
Oh, yeah, Tom Luganville joining us as he does each and every Monday, brought to you by our good friends at River Bank and Trust here in the Montgomery River region area, as well as Auburn and Opelika as well. Tom, good Monday morning. Hope you're doing well, my friend.
I'm good. Are we making radio great or what?
You better believe it. There's no doubt about that. Always look forward to this segment, Tom. And, man, we're getting down to the nitty-gritty. The phones are ringing. People want to know what's going on. National Signing Day, what, about 10 days away?
Yes, sir, February 1st, the first Wednesday of every February. So we're getting ready and cranked up right now, trying to put together the finishing touches on what amounts to end up being election-style live coverage for 11 straight hours for us. So it's a big day. It takes a lot of prep work to put it in.
Let me ask you this, just as a point of reference. Can you sort of walk us through, in a very brief way, the positives and negatives about a proposed December early signing day? Is that a good thing, a bad thing? What are the issues there, Tom?
Well, here's the deal. Each and every time this is brought up, and then it gets tabled, and then it gets proposed again. The reason why nobody can ever settle on anything is because, as per usual, the devil is always in the details. Nobody can come into an agreement of how do we do this without affecting the recruiting calendar? How do we do this without allowing official visits to underclassmen? How do we do this to potentially make it as fair as can be for not only the coaches and their teams, but also for the players? There are so many different variables that go into it. Here's how I look at it. If you are going to do this, this is the only real time frame where you could do it and not disrupt the recruiting calendar. Also, for the most part, now you're going to have some rare cases, but for the most part, if there were to be a coaching change or something were to shift coming off of the season, by this time, most coaching hires would have already been made. So you would feel more secure that the player could feel like, okay, I'm comfortable with signing, as opposed to if you did something in June or August and a kid signs and now all of a sudden they're in it out for this young man. And so I think there are positives to it. I do worry a little bit about that it could create a wider gap between maybe some blue bloods or the haves and have-nots. If you've got 17 kids verbally committed in December and you only got four more spots left, and you get all those 17 signed, and now you're going to spend the next 6 weeks just trying to secure four more guys, and guess what the rest of your staff's going to be doing? You're going to be working on the next class.
Yeah.
Sure. And so I think there's some advantages there that maybe wouldn't apply to everybody.
I've always been a little concerned, Tom, about an early signing period. What if a player gets hurt and the coach goes, ooh, wow, wait a minute, that's not what we were banking on? I don't know if there was an injury involved, but obviously last week there was a lot made out of what happened at UConn. And I think if you get into the early signing period, you might have coaches going, wow, this guy got hurt. He's no good to me anymore. That's what concerns me.
Well, the situation with UConn that occurred last week is a little bit different in the sense that there wasn't any injury involved. It was more an evaluation that was made by an incoming staff that chose to make the decision that they didn't feel that player, who they did not offer, who they did not actively recruit, was a good fit for them. And, see, I have no problem with that. If it's handled the right way, now, if you're telling a kid one thing and then you're doing something different, I'm not defending that.
Sure.
But I don't believe any new staff should be held accountable for what a previous staff has done. There's a reason why there is a new staff. Obviously, the previous staff wasn't getting it done. And so if you got to move in a different direction and your job is to get the players in there, then you need to do what you feel you need to make things happen for your new current staff and going forward for your program. As far as injuries are occurring, more often than not, and I would almost venture to say 9 times out of 10, that is an area that coaches in programs are going to honor. Unless it is an injury that would prevent the player from actually taking the field, and now you're using a scholarship for that player, and he has no ability to take the field for you. And again, if you're going to have an injury that, let's just say an ACL or an Achilles, those things are going to, you're going to make the assessment on whether to keep a kid based off of his ability level. If you know he's going to come back from the injury, then your choice is going to be made on whether he's good enough, not necessarily whether he's injured or not.
Tom Luganville is with us from ESPN on our Dreamland Barbecue guest hotline. Any insight into the late offensive coordinator hire at Auburn concerning Chip Lindsey? What do you know about him and the development of quarterbacks under his tutelage?
Well, this guy has a long-standing background as a high school coach in the Southeast region. He understands the footprint. He already has established relationships. As he entered into the college ranks, he tutored under Rhett Lashley and Gus Malzahn as an analyst and I believe GA at the time for Auburn. So he understands the internal dynamics of the program, what Gus Malzahn wants. He's going to have intimate knowledge of the scheme from terminology all the way down to approach. He's applied a lot of those own principles on his own as he moved on and took other jobs at other places, including places like Memphis and, of course, most recently Arizona State, where they were a pretty successful group on offense. They're just terrible on defense. So that was one that I actually thought would happen. I thought it was the best fit, the most familiarity. And coaches are going to generally, you know, lean on that. If there's a guy out there they feel comfortable with that they know they've got a background with, they're going to feel pretty good about it. I think Chip Lindsey's a quarterback guy. He's obviously an offensive friendly guy if you're a quarterback, which I think is going to mean an awful lot to Jarrett Stidham. And I think Jarrett Stidham, in this whole equation, that's a guy that Gus Malzahn wants to make sure, as all the quarterbacks are at Auburn, that he's comfortable with the move going forward and that things aren't going to dramatically change in terms of their offensive approach.
Tom, I know people ask you during this time of year to give your opinion in projecting players and how they'll pan out or how they'll perform at on the college level. And I guess people would assume that a guy like Najee Harris, the number one recruit in a lot of people's minds, is going to automatically step in. But, you know, it's circumstances, depth, things like that. In saying that, what program do you think has got a guy that, bam, this guy's going to step in and be able to play and be a difference maker, and this is who they really need. This is just a great match between player and program. Is there one of those examples out there on not only a national scale, number one, but also in the SEC as well?
Now, are you referencing just the running back position?
Well, no, really any player. I mean, any position. Could be a left tackle.
Well, I can tell you right now, in my opinion, our number one and number two ranked player in this class, Trey Smith, an offensive tackle, and Isaiah Wilson, an offensive tackle, are both not only good enough to play right away, but they are committed and signed to programs where they better play right away because they're both at offensive tackle. And both Tennessee and Georgia are in dire need of offensive line help. And so this is one of the stronger offensive line classes as a group, top to bottom, that we've experienced in a long time, guys. There are a lot of college-ready players, without question in my mind, at the position. So those top two guys right off the bat certainly come to mind. I think Cam Akers, you mentioned Najee Harris, a little bit more depth at running back right now at Alabama, but with the loss of Dalvin Cook at Florida State, I think Cam Akers is going to come right in and probably have a pretty significant role as a running back. And listen, if you're looking at freshman running backs, talent doesn't keep them off the field. These two things do: putting the ball on the ground and not understanding pass protection. If those two things are a problem, you're not playing as a freshman. And so that's something you've always got to look out for with running backs.
And with running backs, Tom, I would have to imagine in high school, man, here's the rock, tote it. I can't imagine that there's a lot of running backs out there where the head coach is going, hey, also I need for you to block while you're at it. I know you can run it. So to me, yeah, I can see that is probably a difficult adjustment for a lot of these running backs.
Well, it is because they're not asked to do it. But number two, they're not all that well-versed on the theory of the game either. They're told, all right, your aiming point is the inside leg of the guard on this run, and that's where you need to be. They don't understand fronts and overs and unders and odds and evens and one techniques and three techniques and, you know, will strong safety weak. They don't know any of those things. They don't understand how to recognize. And so you've got to be very, very careful what you do with them. And I'll tell you another thing that has become so critical in the evaluation process, but is also very difficult to evaluate, is how important the running back has become in the passing game in the last 5 years of college football. If you're not a dynamic pass catcher, if you're not a guy that adds value there, then your premium is going to be lower than maybe that of some other guy. And so, to me, when a guy is at the high school level, he's getting handed the ball and he's running. That's what you're going to see the bulk of. You may not see all that other stuff that matters.
Tom Luganville joining us here today on our Dreamland Barbecue Guest Hotline, brought to you by our good friends at River Bank and Trust. So the two players that you mentioned at Georgia and at Tennessee, is there a guy nationally, is there a program nationally that you think a lineman or any type player, for that matter, can step in like you mentioned those two guys for Georgia and Tennessee? Oh, I think we've lost Tom there.
I think we did lose him.
We lost Tom there for just a moment.
Yeah, I apologize.
Tom, I'm sorry.
I'm back.
Yeah, there you go. I'm sorry about that.
Hey.
Yeah, I was just asking about the question. You know, you mentioned Florida and Georgia. Is there a program nationally where you think that same case scenario might fit?
In relationship to
a guy coming in. Yeah, coming in and making an impact.
Yeah, I tell you, I really think, in my personal opinion, I think there's some players, to me, at USC that are capitalizing with this class, that are really capitalizing on the season that they had, particularly in the offensive line, Elijah Vera Tucker. And then I think at running back, they're going to lose Justin Davis, and then a year from now, they're going to end up losing Ronald Jones, and our number three ranked running back in the class is Stephen Carr. We think he's going to be special. So the class for the Trojans isn't very big, only 17 verbal commitments, but I think it's going to have a lot of impactful players that will see the field early and often.
Well, let me ask you about something I specifically noticed before our last visit a week ago. It doesn't have anything to do with Alabama, with the state of Alabama. It doesn't have anything to do with the Southeastern Conference. But I'm looking at the ESPN Top 100, and it occurs to me that David Shaw at Stanford is getting a lot done out there. A quarterback from Georgia, a big offensive lineman, and a tight end have already been committed. It seems as though Stanford is a school that has always had a lot to offer, but it seems difficult to be able to get, you know, everybody that they want in that school. Well, what about the opportunities inherent there to play for David Shaw?
Well, here's what, and David Shaw carried this on, but Jim Harbaugh started it. You know, everybody talks about the academic restrictions and how stringent they are, and the players that you have to choose from that can meet that standard that you've got to have. A lot of people look at that as a difficulty. What I actually think it does, and I think Jim Harbaugh felt this same way, is it actually cleans up the pool for you. You know exactly what you can do and what you can't do. So now you've lessened the numbers, and you have a more workable number. That's number one. Number two, if you're going to be a Stanford-type guy, more than likely you're thinking 50 years ahead, not 4 years ahead. So you may want to be a heart surgeon or an architect or an engineer or what have you. Well, there's a lot of those guys out there, but how many of those guys truly love football? How many of those guys, how many Andrew Lux are there? How many David DeCastros are there? How many Christian McCaffreys are there that are as passionate about the game of football as they are about the academic side? Because they know what's coming over the horizon when they've got to make a living. But the game is so important to them. And to me, that's where Jim Harbaugh and Stanford and what David Shaw have done such a good job of, is somehow having that blend of meeting the standard but also having the guy that loves the game. And that's why they continue to be competitive. I think they're going to be a much better football team than the one they were this year. But if you think about how they started the season and then how they quietly ended it, it was a really good football team that nobody was talking about. So they continue to make inroads in the offensive line. At quarterback, as you referenced, with Davis Mills, I think he's going to be a really good player. Fits them perfectly.
Tom, my last question before we let you go. We got about 10 days before National Signing Day. Next Monday, we really look forward to talking to you on the eve of signing day or 2 days before the big day. But with 10 days to go, at this point, Tom, what program has really impressed you in terms of where they are right now leading into the home stretch, could wrap it up having a better year than you anticipated? And what program needs to pick it up in this last 10 days?
I think South Carolina, because of their success on the field, it was probably unexpected, really got a boost in Will Muschamp's first full calendar year in recruiting. It's a big class. It's a very talented class. They've really met the need in the defensive secondary and certainly in the defensive line, which I think was really, really important. Conversely, I think that Ole Miss is really struggling right now, and they just can't seem to get that cloud looming over their program to dissipate, and they don't have any finality to what's happened with the NCAA. And there's one thing I know about recruits and players. They don't like uncertainty, and they don't like instability, and I think that's playing a significant role in a negative way for Ole Miss right now.
Wow, very interesting, as always. Tom, you mentioned, we'll go ahead and let you let our listeners know about this. You got a lot of programming coming up on recruiting. Can you give us a little thumbnail about what we can expect?
You betcha. So I'll be on College Football Live this week on Wednesday and Friday, so I'm sure we'll be talking some recruiting content there. It'll be 12:30 Central Time, and then Thursday we'll have Recruiting Nation on ESPNU. That'll be 5 o'clock Central Time, and then I'll be heading to Bristol this weekend to go through the car wash and then get worn out until February 2nd, which is my favorite day of the year.
I hear you. We look forward to talking to you next Monday.
It's always great to visit with you. Can't wait to talk with you again next week. Appreciate the time.
Sounds good, guys. Have a great week.
You too, buddy.
Okay, let's do it again. I'd love to.
Listen for ESPN's Tom Luganville every Monday at 8:20 a.m. on Sports Radio 740 with John and Barry. Brought to you by Riverbank and Trust. If you want to experience real customer service without a whole lot of fuss, then go see our friends at Riverbank and Trust. Catch Tom Luganville next Monday at 8:20 here on Montgomery's Sports Leader, Sports Radio 740.
Find jewelry.